Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and we are back, folks. We are back having a chat with the best aggregate pollster in the country, Harry McEvan Sonia. Harry, thanks for doing this again. It's great to see you. Martin, for your listeners' benefits, is literally lying on the cold tiles because it's...
Sitting.
Partially sitting. This is what he does to endure. Like, I mean, just to be able to have the mic up to his mouth, this is what he needs to do, folks. You've no idea the sacrifices he makes for this, which we'd rather he didn't, to be honest with you, because listeners prefer it without him. Before we get into some of the politics, the movers and shakers and all of that nonsense of how the horse rider and all this kind of crap analogies that we've been hearing, I do want to talk a little bit about what we saw in Moscow yesterday. The scenes were absolutely horrific. The level of death is incredible. The damage done is horrendous. And unfortunately, yet again, we see some of the worst of us as human beings when this situation happens. Because, you know, I have friends in Moscow, I have friends in Kyiv, I have friends across. And people immediately, though, when you look at this and you go to, I would say, trusted accounts, trusted journalists who are doing the work, you know, they're reporting factually, and the immediate replies to them, though, were by larger accounts. And Harry, you would have seen these, you know, these accounts. These are the ones that have huge followings, huge agendas, and have weaponized certain conflicts. And they were immediately talking about false flags, or they were talking about, you know, this is using it to serve a purpose, serve an agenda. And we have to do better than this as a society. Like, it's 140 people dead. And I know the facts remain now, as far as we know them, that, you know, there has been a claim that it was ISIS, effectively the spin-off, have said, yeah, we did it. But again, you know, you have to fact check all of these things, because the channel that they made their claim through isn't the same as the one they would all normally use. So all of these things are still up in the air. But it just shows you, though, we went straight to the blame game, and whose purpose was, you know, did Putin do it so quickly after he just won the election? Did the Ukrainians do it as revenge? Was it the Muslims? And, you know, and I spoke to a fella who I know in Moscow for many, many years now, who last night just literally went out and walked the streets because he felt like there was nothing that else that could be done, because this, like, you know, you can't, it's like, it's not, it's, I'm going to say it straight out, folks, it's not, it's, you can't have, you can't express the opinions you maybe want to express. We know that in certain ways, but my God, how dangerous it is right now for situations whereby other bad faith actors are weaponizing it and using it to serve other purposes. And Martin, as you made the point before we came on, it should be better than this. It's just people are dead.
Yeah, look at this. Just take it what it is. People went to a concert, gunmen walked in, killed people who were unarmed, didn't go out for that purpose, just ordinary folks. And they might be Russian folks, but they're still ordinary folks. You know, they want the same things that Irish folks and English folks and American folks want. They want the bit of security, job, and somewhere to live. And that's all anybody wants really in their lives, and they can't have it. And for whatever reasons, they can't have it. You know, you can speculate away, but, you know, 100-odd people have lost their lives completely unnecessarily in a horrific way. But that doesn't take from the horror that's going on in Gaza. It doesn't take from the horror that's going on in the Ukraine. It just doesn't take from it. It's just more horror on horror.
I think that's a fair point. And I don't know, Harry, if you have any comment, but it's certainly not something that I'm sick of it. I'm sick of death.
No, it's horrific. And I think one of the things, like, I mean, there's very little to add to what you said in terms of the event itself and the attack itself, which is obviously horrendous. But the one thing that you did mention that I think is worth picking up on in the broader milieu around it is the response to this, particularly online, has been little short of horrendous, and the lack of humanity that's been shown. Look, it's more than likely based on the claims that the Islamic State, Khorasan province, are responsible for this. The rush online for people to share videos of what was happening, extremely graphic material, for people to tie this into their prior worldview, to point the finger of blame at Ukraine, at America, at the Russian government, at Mossad, at whatever other.
Yeah, the Mossad was the third one straight away out the back. Mossad.
Everyone blames Mossad for everything, despite the fact, you know, look, there's lots of things you can blame Israel for. Again, like real bad things they're doing. Why are we focusing on this? But it's the usual, unfortunately. And it just seems like that's become the dominant mode of response among the loudest and most obnoxious and bad faith actors online. And I think one thing that's really telling of how just messed up this has gotten, Michal Martin put out a very reasonable condolences tweet yesterday. Go and read the responses to that. It is horrendous what people are saying, between people reveling in the fact of what happened, between people again spewing whatever conspiracies they want, between people, and this really is upsetting, you know, being like, oh, you know pointing to other things that are happening around the world and trying to like trade these off as if it's a zero-sum game of empathy or sympathy, to say, oh, you know, the whole thing is just a mess. And I don't think the majority of people are responding like that, but I think the problem is, when we look in the online space, those are the amplified voices. And as we've seen from the just general spread of conspiracism and lack of trust online, it's kind of tied into that, and it's just awful. Like, people are, you know, civilians, people going about their day-to-day lives have been killed, and the fact that people don't even seem interested, a certain section of people don't even seem interested in acknowledging that fact, because, as you rightly said, they think they can bend this towards whatever agenda it is incredibly disrespectful and inhuman. And it's happening in response to all these tragedies and horrible events.
And I think too, Harry, there is an element of, we are so traumatized, but everything we're seeing, we don't even realize how traumatized we are. We have no idea how traumatized we are. But I think we've seen horrific death in Gaza, the most awful, horrific deaths, you know, live streamed. And it's very easy to become inured to what you see. It's very easy to become inured. The more of it you see, the less of an impact it has on you. So, you know, people seeing other people getting shot like that, and these are only people out for a night out. That's all they were, really. You know, think of an Irish pub or an Irish theatre, and it's the same kind of people. You know, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, they all, somebody loves them somewhere. You know, you can't demonize them because they're Russian. You can't. They're just ordinary people. They don't make the decisions that cause wars. It's their sons and daughters that go off and fight in these things and die. They just get the loss. They don't get any of the gains. So, you know, try not to depersonalize people to that element. They're not economic units. They're not, you know, war units. They are living, breathing people with real lives.
I just want to say one thing on what, if I can come in, Harry, if you don't mind, is because it's conversations with yourself and other people who watch the online space. This is more for listeners. Watch the stuff you're sharing. You know, you may feel that something appeals to your own confirmation bias and you're sharing it, and you wouldn't realize that the source is something that is acting, you know, in such a way as to weaponize certain agendas or use certain narratives. So just for listeners, just watch the stuff you're sharing, particularly on these events, because I've seen it so often, and we've seen how it actually then, you know, it's the old cliche. Well, he was on the right side on X thing, so I kind of support him on Y thing as well, even though I'm not really comfortable with Y thing. And it's worrying that you see that kind of that develop. So that would be my other thing. Go ahead, Harry. Sorry.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. And I think there's one thing to add to that is, look, the vast majority of people, as much as we might not like to accept it, and this goes back to what Martin mentioned, we are not psychologically equipped to watch the fire hose of this stuff that comes online. The level of death and destruction and violence being pumped out in real time or shortly after the fact, the availability of videos of the most horrendous things, most people, vast majority of people, are not equipped to deal with that at all. And even the people who are well equipped are probably, you know, you cannot just exist in that space forever without it doing you some damage. So watch what you're sharing, but also, like, for everyone, like, be mindful of what you're looking at. Be aware of your limits. You know, you're under no obligation to look at this. You can still, you know, you can still acknowledge these things for what they are. The spread of graphic imagery and the amount of graphic imagery people are intaking at the moment can be really damaging to them as well. So people need to be like, look after yourself, look after what you're sharing, and be mindful of your limits, even if, you know, they don't immediately appear apparent to you, and the limits to people around you, because, you know, none of us are equipped to deal with this on the scale and speed with which it spreads on the internet and with which it can just come into our vision, prepared for it or not.
That's it.
So people need to really look after themselves on that one.
Right, we think we should probably move on. Just as I said, we just wanted to cover that. I do want to talk, obviously, Irish politics. So I do want to talk about what's happened this week. It's hard to know where to start. Do you start with the part where, you know, people are being lectured now for not being very polite about Leo Varadkar when he stood down?
Start with that part. Let's start, because we're on the old media jag. Start with that part, Tony. Let's start with that part. So we're all being told, how are you, riffraff? Why aren't you standing up and saying, oh, he was a great man, and regardless of his mistakes that he's made over the years, why aren't you taking a moment to pause and say what a great man he is? And at the same time, the people who are saying this to us are scrambling away in the background to put a puppet Taoiseach in place. Not one of them paused for 1 second, not for 1 millisecond did they pause and go, oh, poor Leo. Not one of them. They just all jumped in really quick. This is what we're going to do. We've been waiting on this scenario. X, Y, Z. Get all these headlines out to the newspapers. Let's get Simon in place. Wrap this up. Done deal. 48 hours. Done. Sold. And that's what's after happening to us. And do you know what I say? Fuck you. Fuck you. You sold me nothing. Nothing.
I understand the need for people to have this. There is a very Irish thing. Maybe it's not a very Irish thing. Maybe it is a global thing. But there's this idea of, and I do refer to it all the time, as the cult of civility. It's the phrase where, you know, you're not being complimentary about the quality of the leather that's pressing on your neck. You know, the letter in the boot, excuse me.
But it's not even, no, it's hypocrisy, because no. They don't give a fuck. They don't give a shit. It's lecturing to us.
No, I don't really care about, you're talking about Fine Gael's, what they've done and the government coalition stitch-up. I'm talking about the elements of media that have said, you know, like, I mean, we've seen, okay, I'll give you three real life examples. Pat Leahy and Harry McGee are two. They both refer to Leo Varadkar as a social democrat who started out what you would call centre-right, but is now you're just a normal run-of-the-mill social democrat. And Elaine Loughlin, who is the politics editor of the Irish Examiner, saying that the opposition let themselves down by not, you know, being more fulsome in their praise of Leo Varadkar. And I just see, well, no, I don't understand that. There's plenty of time to talk about the, you know, welcome him or see him off. But we have to actually see people in the round, and we shouldn't not be just deciding that it has to be because we want to be polite. We can't actually talk about the impact someone has had 13 years in government. And I said this, Martin, you know, I said this. I don't know why people didn't begin with, you know, the growth in, say, child homelessness. Don't start with, you know, he was, when he made the great speech on COVID, this is how we have to see it. Like, so look, Harry, can...
But you have to connect, you also have to connect the dots, Tony. And you have to connect the dots. Oh, just last week, there was an article in the Irish Times about who the special advisors are. And the special advisors are former journalists, media people, spin doctors. Why? So that when something like this happened, it's spun at us so fast and they have access to all the media. Show me one dissenting voice among the entire media fucking circle. One dissenting voice that has stood up and said, Harris, you're a fucking head.
Can we get to Harris later, please, if you don't mind? You're desperate to run ahead.
No, but I'm saying about the full media thing, Tony. Why do they hire all these special advisors if not be able to set the narrative like that in a second, which they've done with Harris, which is, you know, when you look, you talk about Cruz, what's just happened is unreal in the media. Unreal. No dissenting voices whatsoever. Not one.
But Harry, I put it to you then that the public aren't taken in by what Martin is saying, by this preordained thing. And I think what the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has done is actually going to cause so much trouble for Fine Gael, because when people sit back and look at this, when you actually see what he said, listen to his speech, the first 5 minutes about how great he's done, and then he says, "I'm not the man to take it forward." People aren't fools. They will understand what has happened here, and they will see, you know, they will look around and go, well, there's 12 of them now no longer standing, so that's a third of the party that aren't even standing, and now they want to appoint a new Taoiseach, which is a dissolution of the Dáil and effectively the third government in this term. So all of those things, I don't think it's going to play out very well for voters' patience and tolerance of who are clearly already unhappy, particularly with Fine Gael, because they've been in power so long.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to win anybody over to them. I think the entire reaction has been, I do agree, it's been, I don't know if there's been no dissenting voices, I haven't checked every single piece of it, but the overwhelming tone has certainly been very odd. You'd think he died, to be honest with you, based on the demands for eulogies. It's really weird. Like, he's retired. He's still at all.
He's 45, and he can start another career in whatever, you know. It's like, come on.
Well, start a career.
Exactly. But like, no, look, some of the response has been ridiculous. The opposition shouldn't criticize the outgoing Taoiseach because it should be a moment of unity. And the Holly Cairns in particular came in for an absolute pounding over this because, you know, there's reasons that Holly Cairns gets targeted. We've been over this. We don't need to again. But she was singled out for an exceptional amount of criticism for what were honestly quite mild comments critical of the government, which one would expect from a leader of an opposition party. The consensus has been kind of strange around that. But as you say, it's a combination of multiple things. It's a combination of the desire for so-called civility in our media, which we can talk about how universally applied that is, because it isn't. But certainly is towards what's seen as the I don't like using the word establishment, but that sort of center.
Let's say the legacy. Let's say the legacy center.
The legacy politics for the legacy media, right?
Status quo, I think, is the right word.
Yeah, status quo. Actually, that's a really good way of putting it. So status quo bias there is definitely part of it. And I think that ties into the second thing, is very tied into that, which is, generally speaking, look, the biggest media platforms tend to be less critical of those parties in general because there is an ideological alignment. We know that's the case in opinion writing. That's well established at this point. That shouldn't surprise anybody. But in terms of impact on Fine Gael itself, like, I don't know how much this is going to change, and we'll probably get an idea over the next few months. But, you know, it's not like their support is going to, you know, it's not like their support has been soaring or dropping recently. We've kind of been on a very steady line with that. And a changing leadership, is it suddenly going to bring a load of people over to them, or is it suddenly going to drive a load of people away? Probably not. It's probably going to entrench what people already feel. We might see some movement. Again, a lot of it depends on what Harris does over the next few months. But it's tough to see this as actually kind of being a big deal breaker for people. Varadkar was not tremendously popular, but he wasn't super unpopular either. Like, he was, if you looked at approval ratings, which we should always have skepticism towards, but he's nowhere near a figure of hate in the same way
I'll put it this way. He's higher than Joe Biden's opinion rating, approval ratings all the time. You know,
But I mean, look, America's a bit different.
I know, but I make the point, though, because they always try and put themselves about, he came out of COVID with this huge rating, but the rating returned to where it was pre-COVID very quickly. And
Varadkar has been consistently more popular during this run as Taoiseach than previously. Yeah. And that does not say he was super popular, because he wasn't. But his approval rating has been
I always higher. Find approval ratings one of those metrics that doesn't really matter. If you have an approval rating of 90%, but only 2% of the people give a shit about your party, then what does your approval rate mean? It means absolutely nothing. I mean, it doesn't mean, and it doesn't transfer to any votes. And I think really what was interesting is that Simon Harris came out and said that, you know, Fine Gael is not personality driven. And yet, Tony, we know for a fact that for the entire time Varadkar was in office, it was based around his personality. Everything, including their plans for the election.
The plan for the election was, and it's well documented now, but I remember getting it, the information when they were running, that they wanted to run with the slogan campaign purely based on his shoulders, make him like a presidential type of candidate where it would be him plus the candidate on the poster. And the tagline was to be, "Let Leo lead." And that was what they...
And that's where I was coming back, because Harris specifically said, you know, we've gone for this presidential style politics. Well, it was Fine Gael who pushed it. It was Fine Gael who came out with the presidential style politics and thought one man can lead a party across the line.
Yeah, I do. I mean, they look around and they think of who were the Taoiseach, the statesmen who did it. But unfortunately, like, this is the thing. Leo Varadkar is leaving the stage. Leo Varadkar is a flawed politician. He was never able to, he never had the people's touch. Never, ever, ever, ever. If you've ever seen him in person, he's awkward. He can't make small talk. He's just not good at it. There's a lack of empathy. There's always been a classist element to him. Going back to some of his outbursts when he was, you know, when he was in high office, he went into visits into the Shannon and he said things to working class senators like Lynn Rowan about, I don't know what you mean by class. You know, he's spoken about, you know, why he was destined to get on with things. And Martin, you know this, he said one of the weirdest things he ever came out with, and it is to this day one of the weirdest things he ever came out with, he explained that his parents are obese. And forgive me, I'm quoting him now, okay? Listeners, don't get upset with me for as if I'm body shaming. My parents are obese. I'm naturally would be an obese person, but I get up early and I go to the gym, and that shows that I have the spirit. So other people, in other words, what he meant was other people who just aren't getting on in life, who aren't doing well enough in life, they just don't want it hard enough. And that was an insane, insane thing to say.
I also think too that, you know, when you lose, a leader of Fine Gael gone, a Taoiseach gone, okay, can you not just have a proper analysis of his time? Does it have to be either pro or anti? Can it not just be a proper analysis of his, you know, housing? It's really easy to see what happened in housing for the period Leo Varadkar was in housing. It's extremely easy. And we know that we can see where the tax cuts came for certain sectors so that you could have riots buying up huge, big apartment blocks. And we've seen all of this. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to name Sunday Business Post is a fucking disgrace. I mean, a fucking disgrace when it comes to writing op-eds about Fine Gael. It's a disgrace. The Irish Times is not much better. And the Indo is not much better. So where do you get an objective viewpoint? And, you know, buy a newspaper. Well, at least give us something objective to read. Give us something that we can get our teeth into and go, well, is that the case? Well, instead of this, oh, yous are bastards for not just saying he was brilliant.
Yeah, but why are you upset about that?
Because we live in a country where it's a very small country, where the media has a huge amount of power, huge amount of power. I really do feel that Simon Harris has been sold to us by the media, not by the political parties, but by the media. In harmony, this is the best man for the job. No, he's not. Not by a long shot.
Actually, I have to be honest with you. I don't know if I agree with you on the fluff pieces, particularly the Sunday Business Post has had a very bad run of it, from fluff pieces on Pascal Donoghue, fluff pieces on on Michael McGrath, and now a fluff piece today on Leo Varadkar by someone who's actually... Who's affiliated with the EPP? It's crazy. It's like, you know, these things should come with health warnings. Like, if, you know, they should come with health.
Well, an advertisement.
But then that undermines the good journalism done by actual working journalists who are doing it out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you think that the Sunday Business Post has probably been the best newspaper for property related issues, Tony, over the last 12 months, more 24 months.
More. Since,
you know, it's been the best. And why ruin that really great journalism with these utterly inane
But Harry brought up the abuse Holly Cairns took. Some of it came specifically from Lucinda Creighton. And Lucinda Creighton set the dogs on social media wise on Holly Cairns. And Lucinda Creighton writes for the Business Post, is a lobbyist, has a company that actively is a lobbying company, very successful one, I might add. So it is kind of, but I know what you're saying. But I don't want to give it too much credence on this podcast, because I think there's a whole conversation to be had about that ugly corridor that leads from Paul Kaur to special advisor to the lobbying industry. And, you know, it's a well-worn path and it's a trope at this stage. Some people like Harry McGee are outliers that they've stayed so long in the journalistic terms, you know. Most of them get out. But if I want to come back, I want to play a clip for you. I'm going to play a clip here of Simon Harris coming in and how he's talking about the energy he's going to bring to the job. It's only a short clip. Bear with us.
And to anybody who thinks this party is tired, to anyone who thinks this party lacks energy, you ain't seen nothing yet.
You'll automatically hear when you listen to that obviously Simon is talking about he just phrased it badly. And that's where we leave you now, folks. If you want to hear the full 1 hour podcast that we did with Harry, it's available right now on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We get into the divergence of political strategies as we head into the election season, be it the locals, Europeans, and of course the upcoming general election. We talk about the reasons why Simon Harris is the wrong candidate, and we talk about a lot more in terms of what is it says about Fianna Fáil, which is a really interesting observation, and some really good insights from both Harry and Martin, less so from myself. As I said, we'd love you to join us. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's the price of a fancy cup of coffee to you, but to us, it's mics on, bills paid, and the show keeps going. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support, and we will talk to you all very, very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.